Fresh off the love train, and boy, are we having fun! And even Walter's up and boogieing, and the boys got moves. So we are all energized up here, and I welcome you to the third hour of this week's edition of Animal World. We're here every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. You can tune us in on the radio dial. You can tune us in on the internet via streaming audio. That means you can share us with family and friends around the country, around the world. And the best way to pull up the internet stream, go to the Animal World website, marthanorwalk.com. Click on the Listen Live link upper right. That'll click you through to the 1150 KKNW website. Click on Listen upper left and then Listen Online. You'll be all set to stream the show. And you can find us on Facebook. Go to Facebook, search Martha Norwalk's Animal World. The last post I posted, this just the most gorgeous picture of a swan swimming, beautiful feathers, and the feathers come up and form a heart or over the back of the swan swimming away, and right behind her have four little babies. Oh gosh, this is just, it's an exquisite picture. You might want to check that out. Alrighty, it is the fourth Sunday of a five Sunday month, and it's a teaching, behavior teaching show with me and my guest Walter Stoffel is here. Lance, A Spirit Unbroken is the book. And Walter, just how do people get a copy of your book if they haven't read Lance yet? How do they read about what a stupid human being you are and how you're lucky to be alive on this planet anymore? How do they find that out?
You're lucky you're a couple of thousand miles away from me. But you know what? I wear it as a badge, not necessarily of honor, but of reality.
Yeah. Yeah.
They can go to walterstoffelauthor.com.
And that's S-T-O-F-F-E-L. Walterstoffel.com.
Stoffelauthor, A-U-T-H-O-R.com. And there they actually also, I actually have an audio book version of it.
Oh, wow. Okay. So
walterstoffelauthor.com.
Yeah, walterstoffelauthor.com. Great. And I think you even can authorize or autograph the books and stuff. And
well, if they buy them from me, yes. If Great. They buy them from that store that's called A and ends in an N, no.
Right. But if they buy it from you, you can sign the yes. sign the book. So anybody's got a border collie or a dog that bites them.
Yeah, right.
If you want to read,
you'll immediately relate.
Yep. You want to read the book. And also you'll learn what not to do with your dog. Oh, too easy to get shot by people and all of that sort of, anyway. So we, trying to teach you everything I know about behavior training, behavior modification, rehab stuff. And we are finishing up on the separation, anxiety and separation issues. And we've covered most all of the bases with that. We've talked about why dogs, you know, cause problems when owners leave, and the emotional comings and goings, and how to balance and stabilize that, and the 15-minute ignore to take it out. And then we just went through all the crate training as a puppy to get them used to being separated. And by the way, with puppies, you know, you create them at night when they're sleeping, during the day when you're gone, when you're home and you choose not to supervise. Small breeds of dogs mature faster than large breeds. Medium to large breeds dogs, you should follow the confinement supervision scheduling for at least the first year and a half, sometimes 2 years of the dog's life. Smaller breeds often mature faster, so sometimes by a year of age, so between a year and a year and a half, you can start weaning off the crate. But the crate would be used when you're weaning off. Dogs are old enough and have gotten through all the grow-up phases. You start weaning off the crate if you want to, and the first thing you do would be give them freedom at night when you're around, and then unless, of course, and creating time during the day or whenever you are around. And the last thing you would wean them off would be the crate when you are gone from the house, because that's the hardest for them. But it's a gradual weaning them off the crates, and you should get there pretty easily if you've done everything we've talked about here. Now, let's talk about, remember, I've already told you the difference in my opinion of separation anxiety versus separation issues. And we got a boatload of weird separation issues coming out of the pandemic and the lockdowns and us not being so social. And I still find that many people, as you know, are not back to their regular social practices that they were before the pandemic. So dogs just aren't getting as much socialization as they really could use and need growing up. And so it can be a bigger issue. Now, with true separation anxiety, we usually need Dr. Nels and sometimes blood tests and checking thyroid and Pleckner syndrome and balancing that stuff. But with separation issues or with minor separation anxiety, then we can usually, with everything, all of these other things we're doing, we'll work through the problem. Now, but if we've got a dog that really, really has a problem when their owners leave, now the little ritual that, you know, the kind of the bottom line that you have to do, it takes a little bit of time. And I'm just going to let you know up front, you feel really stupid when you're doing it, but it really, really works. Okay. And this is kind of the old school behavior modification approach to dealing with separation anxiety. And I hadn't had to use it with a client for years, I can remember, until the pandemic and the lockdowns and all of that. And there's so much weird separation stuff going on that I had to resurrect this. So I've had several clients over the last 2-3 years that have had to do this. Now, it's worked in every case, but they all agree you feel really stupid when you're doing it. So you set the dog up. The way you do this is you're going to practice leaving, coming and going. All right. So often what people do is crash course this over a weekend because you're going to be home. And so when you start that you're going to go, but you're not really going anywhere. So what you do is you go through the whole ritual you go through when you're going to leave to like go to work or wherever you're going to go. And so you put on your shoes and then you put on your coat and you get the keys and you explain to the dog that you're going to leave for a while and you'll be back. And sometimes these dogs are being left in crates. Sometimes they're being left loose in the house. That part really doesn't matter in this explanation. I always give my dog a little treat before I leave just to make it more positive. And I don't buy processed treats and foods. I just give Robbie a few pieces of string cheese when I leave. And usually I'm leaving to go do a session. And so I got a pouch of string cheese on my body already. So it's easy to give him treats and then leave. So you would go through this ritual, getting your shoes on, getting your coat on, getting your purse, your car keys, giving the dog a treat, saying, I'll see you later. And out you go. And then you go out, you go, and you're just going to go out for 5 minutes. Now, but the first time you go out, remember that sound interruption you used at the door? If you were, would keep the dog out of the bedroom? Well, you can use this kind of same thing when we're leaving. You can, when you leave that first time, you can kind of hang out, especially if the dog is loose in the house and not crated, and see if you hear any fussing. If you do hear fussing or whining or something, you can do that bang from outside the house. Now, that sound interrupt from outside the door as a beginning process, I also use often for people in condominiums that they can't go anywhere because the dog barks and carries on when they leave their condo and everybody else in the building complains. And so I've had a couple of really dramatic of those cases, older women, husbands died. Now the dog has to be alone when they leave and the dog flips out. Every time we've just left and gone out in the hallway and sat and then done the sound interrupt at the door, problem solved. So that sound interrupt can work really well. But anyway, so you're out the door and you're gone for 5 minutes and you can sound interrupt from outside if you need to, but 5 minutes, then you come back in. You remember your ignore time. You don't go right to the crate and let them out. You do other things for a little bit. And when the dog's up, then you let them out. You ignore them. You do something for a while. And then you take your coat off and your keys and all of that, you know, and then eventually you let the dog out of the crate. All right. A few minutes later, going to do the same thing. You put your shoes on, you put your coat on, you get your keys, you know, you crate up the dog or you tell the dog where you're going, you give a treat and you leave. You go for 10 minutes this time. Now, and well, first it's going for 5 minutes and you go through this whole process and go for 5 minutes until you can go out for 5 minutes, come back in and the dog is just nonplussed. No big deal. Then you go for 10 minutes. When you go for 10 minutes, come back in, dog's fine. You go for 15 minutes, come back in. So you go through this whole ritual each time. You know, you're putting everything on and all the ritual signs and out you go. And then you come back and you take everything off, let the dog out, and then you do it all over again. So you feel really dumb going through this process. So 15 minutes until you come back in and the dog's nonplussed. Then you do 20 minutes, then you do 30 minutes. When you can do this little ritual for 30 minutes and the dog is fine, you've generally solved the problem. You're good to go. Okay, that 30 minutes is a key time frame. You notice that was played a part in crate training as well. Now, I can't tell you how silly you feel when you're doing this because it's a silly little ritual and you have to do all the parts, but it really, really works. Now, all the cases and all the separation stuff that I've seen in the last 3 years, you know, through the whole pandemic thing, I think there's only been two cases that they had to go through this process. And one was kind of a Shepherd Husky mixed breed sort of type. And she did it once and it worked really well and separation problem resolved. Now the weird thing about this case was then sometime after that, she changed apartments. She moved to another apartment or another living location. I don't remember if it was a house or apartment, whatever she moved to, problems started all over again. So she took advantage of her phone follow-up privileges and called me again. And so we talked about everything and I said, sorry, but you got to do what you did before. So she did the same thing again, solved the problem. They've been fine because they're still living in the same place. But, you know, it's a weird little ritual, but it really, really works to condition out the problem. Now, the other one, and they were in Duval. What was it? And that was a larger dog. Nice dog, but just had the separation issues, not anxiety. They had to do a little bit of this and solve their problem. So maybe two, maybe three times in the last 3 years, I've had to have clients do this. But so it doesn't have to happen very often, but that's what you need to know to work through it completely with some animals. So that all the separation stuff, understand everybody, and we're good? All right.
Yes.
Then, Why don't we, Nathan, do advertisers before I launch onto something else? Sound good? All right. So we are going to take care of advertisers and then we will continue. And then we're going to go with good games versus bad games and field trips and my favorite dog and coming when called and how you teach off-leash following behavior. All of that stuff coming up. So stay right where you are. Animal World continues right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
There is a horizontal world, And there's our vertical world. Living horizontally, our concerns are based in fear and survival. But then we hear a call to live vertically, to connect to our wholeness. Linda Rasmussen, with Vertical Energy, uses a process that helps you balance higher consciousness through your body. When you live vertically, you reap the benefits of health, peace, and clarity. For a free introductory session, call 206-841-1992.
Hi, this is Martha. Did you know that besides hosting Animal World, I'm also an animal behavior therapist and trainer with more than 40 years of professional experience? I work with you privately in your home or over the phone to help you understand your animal friends and resolve whatever behavior training or healing problems you've got going on. Most of my expertise is with cats and dogs, but I sometimes work with other types of animals as well. So whether it's puppies or kittens, adult dogs or cats, or elderly animal issues, I can help. Cats not using the litter box? Biting or scratching you or your furniture? Maybe they're fighting with each other or waking you up at night. I've got answers. Dogs barking too much, jumping or dragging you around the block on your walk? Does he have separation anxiety or chew up stuff he shouldn't? I've got answers. Whatever's going on with your animal friends, I will help you fix it. I am more than reasonably priced and often need to see you only once. I always do a free, no-obligation telephone evaluation, so give me a call and bug my voicemail if you need immediate attention. You'll find me at Martha's Canine, Feline, and All Creature Counseling at 360-217-7258. That's 360-217-7258, and I'd love to hear from you.
Talk radio with a purpose. Alternative Talk 1150.
Hey, I'm Martha Norwalk, and thank you for spending your Sunday morning with us here on Animal World. We're here till noon today, and every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here in Alternative Talk, AM 1150. And we heard from our wonderful Linda Rasmussen from verticalenergyworldwide.com. She is our bioenergetic synchronization technique and energy codes practitioner. And boy, she's just a very gifted healer and such wonderful energy. And she can really help you move through all kinds of emotional and physical stuff. And she still continues to offer a free introductory session to anyone who calls or texts her at the number I'm about to give you. You can check her out at verticalenergyworldwide.com, Vertical Energy Worldwide, and you can call her, text her for a free introductory session. The number is 206-841-1992. 206-841-1992. Okay, then. So I think we are good, and now we can get back to more teaching, and we're left with mostly the fun stuff here. So let's talk a little bit about some good games and bad games with dogs. Now, this information is most important for young dogs and puppies, because some games are really good to play with puppies, and depending on the puppies, some games are not. And the good games teach to puppies in young dogs would be, you know, the best one really, you know, is a retrieve game of some kind. Either usually start with a ball and throwing a ball, or throwing toys and then bringing them back. But laying in a good retrieve game is one of the best things you can do for your dog, because if you got a good retrieve going, then you've got a way to exercise your dog. Even if you can't go outside, you know, you can run them up and down the hall or up and down the stairs, or you can do something in the yard. And so it's a great way to exercise often when you can't take them out and just let them run like crazy all over the place. And usually, like I said, you start with balls and toys. And then some dogs, you know, become really good retrievers and are ball dogs. Annie Golden Retriever, my Golden Retriever before Robbie now, was a great retriever, but she was a ball dog. I tried to turn her into a Frisbee dog, Nathan, but she just wasn't into Frisbees. And I wanted to do some of the Frisbee competition training, which I took her through and did some. And she did it, but she just wasn't great. Robbie decided to be the opposite. And he'll retrieve a ball, but he's not wild about it. He loves Frisbees. So I play Frisbee with Robbie every day when we can't go running. And so retrieving games are really the best. Now, the games that you have to be careful with and what you don't want to play with puppies, tug of war can be a problem. Now, it's a favorite game of so many, and especially the guys. So everybody wants to do tug of war with your dog. But when you realize when you're raising a puppy, remember you're teaching patterns and behavior for a lifetime. And when you play a tug of war game with a puppy, you're pitting yourself against the dog in a play fight situation. So you're kind of telling them it's okay to fight with you. And because we don't understand this, we set ourselves up for even bigger failure. Because how does a kind of war go, tug of war game go? You know, dogs have the toy and we grab it and we start, we pull it and then we get tired of doing it. So we just let them run off with the toy. Well, every time you do that, they notch their belt and say, yes, I won. I am the boss. Okay. So with most puppies, it's a good idea, especially you got terriers, some of the smaller breeds and or feistier breeds, that you're better off not playing tug of war with them when they're really young. But if you do, keep it happy, keep it light. And when you're done, you take the toy. You don't let the dog run off with it. You take the toy because you're the alpha. Now, you then either put it away for next time or you can toss it back out. If you leave the toy out, you just don't re-engage with the tug of war with the dog. But that's the reasoning behind that and the reason we don't recommend playing tug with young dogs. Now, the opposite can also be true, because sometimes if we've got a really shy, no self-esteem dog, puppy, then we play tug of war to build their self-esteem and build them up. So sometimes it can be a good thing. And then if you've got an older dog, now a great, you got to remember one of the fundamental principles. If it ain't broke, you don't have to fix it. So if you play tug with your dog all the time and it's a favorite game and you love it, but you don't have behavior problems and he doesn't blow you off in critical situations, then that's not a problem and you can do that. So tug can also often come back when they're older and all of that and the, you know, patterns are set and there aren't issues, but you just try to remember to win rather than lose in the tug of war game, because in dogs, it's all about the pecking order. Okay. Does that make sense?
I'm just kind of thinking of Abby's tug of war situation. She's one of those dogs where you got to work her way into the tug of war. I mean, you'll hold out the rope and have her grab it, and then she grabs onto the rope, you pull on it, comes out, no problem. Then you put it up into her face again, she grabs on it, maybe a little bit of resistance, but, you know, she lets go and it goes back to you. Then after maybe 3 to 5 tries, that's when she starts holding on and giving you the play growl as she's pulling back on it with you. So I'm just a little bit curious about her
situation.
Well, I would
say, you know, first of all, Abby is a border collie.
We don't do this much. I mean, we probably play tug of war maybe once a month. So it's not a frequent game at all.
Yeah, well, and Abby's a border collie. And so she's smart and she's sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that would indicate, see, playing tug with your leader, you're not supposed to really do that in the dog world. Okay. So it really is pitting you against her. And I think with her sensitivity, and I think that you guys have a really good relationship and she loves you and respects you guys and somehow knows that you're in charge. See, she's hesitant to do that with you.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're having to kind of build. So now that would be similar to a dog we might use tug of war to build confidence in and get them to take us on. Because we want that. And so what you do is when you first are starting, remember that they get the pictures in your mind. So you don't want to go into it thinking, oh, she's not going to do it right away. I'm going to have to work to get this. You go into it imagining her getting into it right away so that you're thinking the right thing. And then as she... That's...
You're good.
Really? Okay, then, now.
Bear with us one moment. A little bit of crackling.
Can you hear me now? Okay. Now, at any rate, we sometimes use that to, you know, to build self-esteem. So when you would start it, when you would first start that tug and she starts to take it in her mouth a little bit, that's when you'd calmly start saying, good, 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 just real calm, good, good. Now, see, I have been so precise with my words with Robbie that, you know, if I'm teaching him like a trick, and so I've got the food in front of his nose and I'm trying to get him to move a direction. As soon as he starts to go that direction, I say, good, good, good. And then he gets the treat once he's gotten to what it is he's supposed to do. When they learn then that when you start saying good, good, they learn that, oh, that means I'm doing the right thing and I should keep doing it. Okay. So you just start good, good, good. And then she lets it go. You just shut up. And then encourage her back in. And as soon as she starts to take it, good, good. And the more she's taking it, good, good, oh, good. You know, and you could make it even more powerful if you had a little food reward, you know, patch a little string cheese. And when she really started pulling, you say, oh, good pull, and give her the cheese sort of thing. But you just calmly encourage it. But I think it's because of she's a smart, sensitive dog, and she's not just real sure she should take on her humans in that way. So that's actually a respectful thing, I think.
So another question would be, would that conflict with a dog in your teaching, you know, during fetch to bring the object back and drop it at your feet? Would that possibly conflict with that?
Because, and that's another reason, and a good point, Nathan, another reason why it's not good to play tug of war with young dogs. Because if you're also working on teaching a retrieve, they're going to enjoy the tug of war usually more than the retrieve. And so the, you know, dogs get, what's the biggest problem with retrieving? They'll go and get it, but they won't give it back to you. And when you try to get it, they want to turn it into tug of war. So it's a good reason not to play tug of war, but then also to, when you know you're done with the tug of war game, you can take a hold of the toy and say give, and then you can gently put your hand over the top of the dog's muzzle and roll your fingers on one side, thumb on the other, roll the lips in. They won't bite down on their own teeth, so they'll start to open their mouth, and you can remove the tug toy and say good, good give. Good give. So if you teach them a give release word, that can be helpful too. But yes, tug of war can mess up retrieve because they'll turn it into tug of war. All right. Now, the other and the one game that is pretty much always not a good idea and a bad game to play is roughhousing or play fighting. Because that pits you against the dog in a play fight situation. You and the dog may really enjoy it, but it can generalize in other areas and cause problems. And it also, of course, is teaching the dog it's okay to fight with you. And if it's okay to fight with you when you're having fun, it's certainly okay to fight with you if there's an issue at stake that the dog cares about. So roughhousing, play fighting is not a good thing to do with dogs. And I try to extinguish it whenever I can with the people that I work with. Now, it can also be generalized. So say what can happen, and this is sometimes with, say, the dad in the house, in the family, is the one that roughhouses and plays fights with the dog, or maybe it's the kids that are roughhousing and play fighting with the dogs. Well, the problem doesn't often happen between the owner or the kids and playing with the dog. The problem it becomes with others, because dogs generalize, assume, and flashback. And they assume if it happened this way once, it's always going to happen that way. Did Nathan and Walter, did I tell you the story of the aggression seminar for trainers that I was monitoring, and the border collie and the golden retrievers in the obedience class? Does that ring any bells?
If you did, it's easy.
Okay. All right. So this explains the concept I'm talking about. I was hired, this is decades, I was hired to go monitor a class where a trainer was teaching a class on dealing with aggression to a bunch of other trainers. but I wasn't part of the class. I was there to evaluate the instruction in the class, so I couldn't chime in. All right, so when the class got over and one of the instructors stood up to ask a question. She explained that she was a 4-H trainer and that she taught a class of 4-H kids, and she had 20 kids and 20 dogs in her class. And the problem she was asking about, she had one border collie in the class. And the border collie, she said, was a really nice dog and really smart and doing well. And that the dog got along with all the other dogs in the class, except for the 5 golden retrievers. And the instructor said, anytime one of the golden retrievers looked at the border collie, the border collie would hair would fly up and the border collie would lunge and charge and want to take the dog out. Okay. Any of the 5 golden retrievers, all of the other dogs in the room was fine with. And then the trainer said, and I really don't understand this, because this dog was raised by a golden retriever. His big brother is a golden retriever, and he loves his big brother, and they play all the time. I don't get it.
Okay, I'm remembering this story now, but I still don't quite remember the details. Right. But you did mention it at one point.
Right, okay. So, just a refresher then. What was going on there? This dog was a smart, sensitive border collie. The dog, but also had a pretty stable temperament. So all of the other dogs, all of the other 15 dogs in the class were different breeds and different mixes. And the dog had no experience with those breeds and mixes. So because the dog had a stable temperament, the dog was fine and wasn't upset with any of these other dogs. But because the dog's big brother was a golden retriever, can you imagine? Golden retrievers are larger than border collies. And so the younger border collie, probably his whole life has been being beat up by his big brother golden retriever. But because it's his big brother and that's their game and their thing, they really love each other. They get along well. But in the border collie's mind, he's made the assumption that this is what golden retrievers do to you. They beat the you know what out of you. So I love my brother and I'll let him do it. But I don't want any of these other goldens to beat me up, so I'm not even going to let them get close. All right, so now let's go back to the dad that roughhouses with the dog. Love my dad, love to play roughhouse. But those dogs then can be defensively aggressive with other men coming around because they can make the assumption, men beat you up, so I don't want any of these other men. One of the worst scenarios is when you let the kids roughhouse and play fight. The dog and the kids get along fine. They all love this. But when their little kid friends come over, the dog says, oh, little kids like this beat you up. I'm not letting them anywhere as close to me. So they generalize the assumption and the fear, and they can be defensively aggressive with others. So it's not a good idea. Does that make sense to both of you?
Yeah, that really
All right.
does.
So be careful with tug of war and no roughhousing or play fighting with your dogs. All right. Now, some other games that you want to do. Now, one of the things that I'm big on, I like teaching off-leash following behavior. And most everybody wants their dogs to, you know, come when they're called. So I'm going to combine both of these things. And we're going to talk a little bit about, coming when called, except that Nathan's saying, look at the clock.
I'm saying come right now.
Yeah. He's saying, Martha. Okay. So we will go ahead before I launch into new subjects. Let's go ahead and take care of advertisers. And while we're doing that, I'm going to check current events to see if there's anything I have to mention to you, because there's nothing new. So I'll check on that. Maybe we don't need to, and we can just teach the rest of the show. So anyway, stay right where you are. Animal World continues straight ahead right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Thank you. Do you feel overwhelmed by the people around you or the energies you encounter daily in today's world? When the drama and the emotions wear you down, it's important to have the tools to deal with the challenges life is bringing your way. And that's where Natasha Venter can help. Natasha is a medium and an intuitive personal awareness coach who is inspired to help those walking through the emotions and grief of today's energies. Visit Natasha's website, angelicclarifications.com, to discover how her unique skills and compassionate approach can help. That's angelicclarifications.com. There's no need to carry the load by yourself. Learn more at angelicclarifications.com.
Would you like to access portals of possibilities for transformation, consciousness, expansion, and new experiences of health and well-being? Ancient knowledge and new science tell us that everything manifests from vibratory frequencies. Jude Ponton can assist you in shifting frequencies for personal health, aligning and balancing your energy or the energy of your home, property, or workspace. Jude can work with you remotely, office, or on-site if you live in the Seattle area. Jude can also teach classes in the Acutonic Sound Healing System. Check out whispering-dragon.com. That's whispering-dragon.com for descriptions of services. Or call 206-706-2836. That's 206-706-2836. You can even email resonate@whispering-dragon.com for information or to schedule sessions.
Hi, this is Martha Norwalk, host of Animal World, and I've got a question for you. Do you or anyone you know own a business, offer a service, or a product that does something good for animals, humans, or this planet? If the answer is yes, then I'd like to invite you to become a member of the Animal World family of advertisers. Lately, people are telling me they think radio advertising is exorbitantly expensive. Well, that can be true, but not on Animal World. Did you know that for as little as $45 a week, you can have two professionally written and produced commercials at no cost to you running on the show? You also get a link to your website on the homepage of the Animal World website and two live interviews on the show. Frankly, you can't afford not to do this. So if you'd like to join our great Animal World family of advertisers, or if you need more information, go to www.marthanorwalk.com to send me an email or call me at 360-217-7258. That's 360-217-7258. Come on, give me a call and join the family. We'd love to have you.
Miss a show on KKNW? Check out 1150kknw.com for podcasts of many of our programs. That's 1150kknw.com.
Heyo, I'm Martha Norwalk, and we are winding down this week's edition of Animal World, but we're here till noon, and every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. And it's true, so you can hear some of the shows on this station on the station podcast, but with the Animal World, all you got to do is go to the Animal World website, marthanorwalk.com, and click on Audio Archives, and you'll find all of the shows there for you to listen to whenever you like. All righty, and we heard from our wonderful Natasha Venter. She's our medium, animal communicator, general psychic person, and personal awareness coach. She's here the third Sunday of every month with me, and she is available. She does some custom classes she can schedule for you, and she also does private readings over the phone or Zoom, and all you got to do is give her a call if you would like to arrange that, and she's very reasonably priced. She also does regular podcasts, two a week, at 4 o'clock on Mondays and Wednesdays. So tomorrow at 4 o'clock, she'll be on, and Wednesday at 4 o'clock. And you can find her at Natasha Venter on angelicclarifications.com is her website, angelicclarifications.com. But you can find her, Natasha Venter, Angelic Clarifications, on YouTube or Facebook to get the live broadcasts of those podcasts for 4 p.m. Pacific time, Mondays and Wednesdays. And then if you'd like to contact Natasha for a reading or something, you can give her a call at 360-770-7486. 360-770-7486. And if you do something wonderful for humans, animals, or the planet we live on, love you to join our Animal World family of advertisers. Shoot me an email if you're interested, animalworldlive@hotmail.com. And remember, Jude Ponton is back in business. Whispering Dragon is now in her home in Shoreline, and voicemail is working, and phones are working, and you can see her in person or remotely. So you can give her a call, 206-706-2836. 206-706-2836. All righty then. My guest today has been Walter Stoffel. And that's S-T-O-F-F-E-L, WalterStoffel.com is his website. And the book is Lance, A Spirit Unbroken. And I think our next show, we're going to break down all the stuff going on with Lance and what we could have, should have, and might have been able to do with that guy. And then get into helping all of Walter's followers and our listeners with specific cases. But let's get back here. We were talking about coming when called and off-leash following behavior. So I'll tell you that coming when called is more a product of good leadership and a solid relationship than it is of training. Now, and some dogs are better at it than others. Some have innate tendencies to take off and run like hounds, follow a scent, blinders go up and they're gone, upland bird dogs, so there are some breeds of dogs that you have to work harder on. Now, I always start coming when called a fun little game that you can play with your dogs. It takes two people. So yeah, you have to start with two people. So if you're a single dog parent, you gotta use a friend. But if you're a family, you take two people, teach the little game, and then you can add more people to the round robin if you like. So what you need is you need your dog, and you need two people, and each person needs a little pouch or a bag or something to have treats. And my favorite drug of choice in the treat department for dogs is string cheese, because it rarely becomes an allergen and it's soft, so you can give them little pieces and you can slice it up and keep it in a bag or a pouch on you and use it as a little food reward. So you start with each handler has cheese or a treat, and one of you has the dog, and then you can just start this little practice and teaching this game in the house. You just need a hallway or an open space in the room so you can get like 20 feet away from each other. All right. And so one of you starts with the dog and you give them a little piece of cheese. And then the other person calls the dog. And if we go back to the correctional teaching sequences and tone of voice and words, when we were doing like a leave it, it's a no, leave it. I mean business tone of voice, or no, off, or no, be quiet. And you're using an I mean business tone of voice. Well, come needs to be happy, and it should sound happy, and it's always happy. Okay. So I like the command come here, because you can kick the second syllable up and make it sound happier. Come here. Okay. So the other person calls the dog, come here. And then it's up to them to do whatever they can do to motivate the dog. Woohoo. Oh boy. Get the dog to come in. And then you treat them on arrival. Good. Come here. Give the piece of cheese. The other person calls them back. Bozo, come here. Good. Come here. We're good. Get the cheese. Good. Come here. You call them back and forth. Now, remember, dogs anticipate rituals. So they figure this out real quick, usually no more than three calls, and they're anticipating. So what they'll do is grab the cheese from one of you and then turn around and head back to the other one before they have a chance to call them. That's what you're waiting for, because they only get paid if they're responding to come here. So if the dog turns and runs back to you before you got the words out, when they get to you, you fold your arms and turn your head, and there's no reward. The other person calls them back. So they only get rewarded if they're responding to come here. Otherwise, you ignore and the other person calls back. Now, once they know the little ritual, then you start stretching out the game, and you have one at one end of the house and one at the other. And one might be upstairs, one's downstairs, one's out on the porch, one's in the house, one's in the backyard, one's in the house, one's in the front yard, one's in the house. And you can stretch it all over. You can make it a three-way or a four-way, do round robins and a bunch of different people. And then you can take it out, and do it outside on field trips and so forth if you want. But that's the basics to starting coming when called and the come here game. Now, then if you have a young puppy, I call them field trips. You have an adult dog or a teenager, and you've been through the puppy stages, then you're going to play my favorite game. So field trips are, I did do this with Robbie. So what I've always done this with my young puppies. And so when the puppies are young, what I would do is take them with me, you know, get them used to riding in the car and go out and drive around and look for a place to do a field trip. And what you want is a big open area somewhere. So I'd take Robbie with me when I was running errands and I wasn't going to leave him in the car. Then we'd look and if there's a green, oh, there's a green belt. I'd pull over and do a field trip there. Oh, there's a big field. I can get into it. I'd go do a big field there. So what I do is you take the puppy on leash to the middle of the area, and then you give them a little treat to let them know you've got it. And then you either take them off the leash or you drop the leash and let them start to wander. All right. So what you're doing, you just kind of nonchalantly wander in place. You're waiting for the dog to pick a direction. So whatever direction the dog goes, you go the opposite way. Because they're new, they don't know this environment, they're more likely to follow. So keep walking, encourage them to follow you. Good, 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 good. When they catch up with you, stop, give them a treat, stop, start just nonchalantly wandering. They go the other way, you go the opposite way. They start to follow you, encourage, you stop when they catch you, you give them a treat. The longer you're there, the more comfortable they become. And at some point, you'll start to walk away and they won't be following right away. So when that happens, you say, see ya, and you start running away. That kicks in their chase instinct. They start chasing you. You keep running. You praise. When they catch you, you stop. You give them a treat. Start over. Now, if you get to the point where you walked away, they're not following. You start running. They're still not following. Then you look for a place to hide. Your dog's focus vision is very poor. Their perception of movement is excellent. So you don't necessarily have to be completely hidden. You can, if you find a tree or a bench or a bush that you can hide next to or stand next to and just hold really still or crouch down. And even if you're not fully disguised, if you hold still, they won't see you from a distance. And so you wait and you watch them until you see them go, oh, geez. Where's my mom? Where's my dad? And then you jump out and say, boogie, 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 run away, run until they catch you, give them a treat, start over. Now, what they learn from this is that, geez, whenever I go somewhere with my human, I got to keep my eyes on them because they can be gone in a flash and that's scary. So it teaches the best off-leash following behavior. Now, I did this even with... a dog. Now I got a session I did out in Edmonds. It was a little white fluffy, probably a Westie, West Highland White Terrier, something along those lines, a white fluffy terrier that was pretty stubborn and out of control. And one of the things she wanted to be able to do was take him to the waterfront dog park. And because up in Edmonds, there's a real nice park on the water, but it's always full of lots of people and dogs, and the dog would never, you know, she couldn't control the dog, keep it with her, and she could keep losing the dog. So anyway, got her educated, got all the other problems worked out. Then we went to this dog park, and it was, I remember it was in, it must've been in the summer because it was a real sunny, nice day. Took a long time to get a place to park. Finally, we got there. We went in wall to wall, people and kids and families and dogs all over this waterfront. And I didn't have a clue if this was going to work because I actually never had done it in this particular situation. So we got kind of to the middle of the area that we could, and I gave the dog a little piece of cheese, and then we let the dog go, and then we took off right, you know, the opposite direction, and I just did that whole process I'm talking about. And even with wall to wall, dogs, kids, families, picnics everywhere, worked like a charm. And that we, by the time we were done, we could not lose that dog to save our souls. We had the best off-leash following behavior in the whole dog park and all the dogs, and she's lived happily ever after. So the field trip thing, you do as many field trips with a young dog as you can. And the idea is to go to as many different places as you can. Now this is all kind of generalized, and I've come up with my favorite game with dogs, which you can do with puppies or you can do with adult dogs or teenagers or whatever. And you can do it at the dog park or one of my favorites. A lot of people don't want to do dog parks, and I understand that trainers hate them, but that's because it's so unpredictable. But some dog parks are great. Some people have great experiences and some don't. Some dogs don't belong at dog parks and dog don't. But there's another thing out there. Have I told you guys about Sniff Spot? Okay. It's a website. Sniff, S-N-I-F-F, sniffspot.com. And as far as I know, it's national. I know it exists here. But you go to that website, sniffspot.com, and then you put in your zip code. And then all of the sniff spot places will pop up on the map all around you. Well, it's very cool because it's private people, and it might be somebody's fenced backyard. It might be their fenced acreage. It might be a whole open acreage somewhere. But it's private places where you can go and you pay $5 or $10 and it's yours for the hour or a half hour, whatever you want to pay. And so you can do field trips. You can have dog parties with your family and your friends, and you don't have to worry about other people and other dogs like you do at dog parks. So the sniffspot.com is a great resource for exercising your dog, for being able to take them places, and also to go play my favorite game. So you can play my favorite game at dog parks, on field trips, at SniffSpot, anywhere. What is my favorite game? Try to lose your dog. So it's the evolution of the field trip. So you go, you know, what happens when people go to a dog park? They let their dog go and then freak out because they're afraid they're going to lose their dog, and they end up chasing their dog all over the darn park. This solves that problem. Okay. So anyway, you go where you're going to go. If it's a place they've never been before, it works faster, but it's the greatest game in the world, and you will never be able to fool your dog for very long once you start playing it. So what you do is you go where you're going to go, one of these areas, a sniff spot, could be a dog park, could be another park, whatever. And the same thing is you give them a treat before you unleash them, and then you start your walk or your wander, and you just pay attention. If they veer off and go a different direction, then you take off in another one and you do your best to run and find a place to hide. So the bottom line is whenever your dog's attention wanders, you take off and you try to lose your dog. Well, my gosh, you will have so much fun, and you will have an unbelievably attentive dog when you're done. And sometimes you have to try to lose your dog once in a while, every few years with your dog somewhere, just to remind them. I've had to do that. I had to do that with my pack of wolves. And I'm trying to fix that. Now,
Martha?
Yes. Yes.
I just looked up a sniff spot in my area.
Yeah.
These look like great. These are great places.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're all over where you are, too.
I mean, I'm not even in a heavily populated area, and they're all like within 10 to 15 miles max.
So it's a national thing, and you can find bunches of it, but it should allow you guys that, you know, you don't want to go to dog parks for whatever reason, or you don't have places to, it gives you places to go to run your dogs and not have to worry about the problems you have at dog parks. And you can do lots of come here training. You can do lots of try to lose your dog games, you know, and retrieving the stuff and all that good stuff. Oh, and by the way, on the retrieve, if you're teaching the little retrieve, I don't know if I told you about the old school trick of teaching dogs to retrieve. You get a tennis ball and you cut a slice in it, then squeeze it open and let the dog see you drop a treat in the tennis ball. And then you roll it and they pick it up, you take it back, you open the ball and give them the treat. It's a real good way to start a little retrieve. Now, we are out of time, so we've got to wrap up for today. Walter, I think I've looked at the calendar, and we're 4 Sundays in November and December, and we got the holidays and all of that. So I think we're going to have to wait for our next show until the 4th Sunday of January.
Okay.
So hopefully you mark your calendar. That'll be plenty of time for you to save the date.
I'm doing it. And I'll even get my computer set up perfectly.
Wonderful. So the 4th Sunday of January, we pick up here. Boot camp for dogs. We'll break up Lance, and then we'll start taking all of the specific cases. So more on that. And we are out of time. So Walter, thank you. Nathan, thank you. Stacy, we love you. See you in November. And everybody else, encore presentation next week. Dr. Nels and Linda, again, you can get surrogate healing just by listening. So as always, let me remind you, animals have feelings too. So treat your animal friends better than family. And please always be kind to open your heart and share your love with all living things.